Thank you, Dave, I think. My name is Cliff Roach, and I'm an alcoholic. And I really like to thank Dick and Helen for having me speak on Monday night. I think they did it because they thought I might die before Wednesday. I might die before tonight's over with. I don't know. But I'm very, very grateful to be invited. I thank the committee, both my Al-Anon and I, thank the committee very much, and of course Jerry and Billy for being such good hosts, and everybody's been so friendly. There have been so many people come up and mentioned other times we had met, and I just had it. And of course the funny thing is, he was talking about his first conference, David was, about hearing me on my sobriety dates. I always forget this. By the way, this is the prettiest part of Texas I've ever seen. Much prettier than most of it. no offense. But Dave was talking about hearing me the first time, and my sobriety date's the 13th of January, 1970. And when I was 8 months sober, my sponsor dragged me to a conference. And the very first speaker I ever heard at a conference was Tom in 1970, and he's still doing it. He's dozing off now, but he's really here. I wanted to give you that compliment before you were clear gone. And he changed my life in a lot of ways. That conference changed my life, the laughter there. Anyway, I always like to start out, say, I took my first drink. That always gets them. Huh? In an AA meeting, you can't miss, huh? I took my first drink, everybody. You can't lose. Yeah? They can't wait to hear what you're going to do. You know, try to go up to some social drinker and say, what was your first drink? I don't know why. But the first drink to us is a big deal. Because it's the beginning of the beginning, huh? And the beginning of the end. And so we're very interested in each other's first drink. I was 16 years old, and I was going to a high school dance, and I was 4'11", weighed 89 pounds, and there were only two girls in the whole school I could dance with, you know, that were small enough. But that night, another little weenie and I got behind this lunch stand, and we gagged down to half a pint of 10 high between us. I don't know what happened to him. I've never seen him in a meeting. But you know what happened to me. You know, I grew a lot. I had some pimples right up to then. And I went to that high school dance, and I danced with them all that night, baby. Come on, baby, let's go. I didn't care where my face was. I just danced with all of them. I did a lot of that bumping that night, too. Were you a macho drinker? Any other macho drinkers here? Yeah. A lot of that, hey, watch where you're going. Hey, look. I bruised several guys' knees that night. Oh, I had a good time. And I could not wait to do it again. I could not wait. Had to wait 2 weeks. And I went to a beach party out at the Kern County River. And a big thing out there. And I drank a fifth of port wine all by myself. I figured that'd be better. And it was. And I had a blackout. Much of my life is hearsay from now on. That's why Dave wasn't lying. When Pat talks Wednesday night, you'll hear what really happened. What the hell do I know? I just have her say. And she admits she used to make stuff up, too. Not that she had to. But that night, they tell me, I tried to whip every guy at this beach party, and they beat hell out of me. And I tried a couple of the smaller girls, and they whipped me, too. And, they tell me later that night I tried a deputy sheriff. And hence, the next morning, I woke up in the Kern County Jail. Not a juvenile facility, Kern County Jail, 16 years old, beaten beyond recognition. Somebody had puked on my chest. I never caught him. He got me so many times that... And they're rattling the bars to get you up. A lot of you remember that. And can you imagine the terror of a 16-year-old kid lying there on that cement floor? Just, and I remember what I said. I said, I'll never do that again. And I never did. I never drank port wine ever as long as I... So that's kind of the story of my life right there. That's the story of my drinking, you know. Lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of times. I'm not going to try to lie. I drank and I had fun. Love to say fun in an AA meeting. They all go, oh, yeah. Little slobber runs out of the corner of the mouth. Because you know what I'm talking about. Huh? Fun. Getting beaten to a pulp and go to jail. Fun. Finding your car at the bottom of a ravine in the morning. Remember that? With you in it. Fun. Oh, I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. You don't want to say fun in an Al-Anon meeting. No. They don't like fun. They have fun. If you say that in Al-Anon, I mean, they all go. Do you remember, you got married, guys? You remember that? Don't you think you had a few too many? If you say you had a few too few, that's your problem, lady. Have a couple and loosen up, for God's sakes. And this one was a counter. They're the worst kind. They're the absolute worst counters. That's your fifth one today. Ah, shut up and eat your breakfast, will you? Leave me the hell alone. And oh, I had all those fun times. But I don't know what you were like, but I had blackouts. And I never had a good blackout. Did you? I've looked for years for somebody in AA. Say, oh, yeah, I had delightful blackouts. Yes, thank you. Not moi. I never woke up and found I'd helped the little sisters of the poor all night or something like that. When I woke up, there was blood. Always my blood. Because, and that's just the story of my life. That's the way I drank almost all my life. Right after I had won World War II, I went to college on the GI Bill, and I met my beautiful and lovely spouse, and she was down on Skid Row looking for an alcoholic to abuse her. And if you're looking to be abused, you got your guy here, I'll tell you for sure. And we entered this 20-year suicide pact together. And we had that dreaded dual disease. I don't know how many of you had that. We had alcoholism and Catholicism. Hence, we had a kid every 9 months and 20 minutes. What it seemed like to me, I'll tell you for sure. Every time I come out of a blackout, what the hell is that? But they're all right when they're little, but they grow. We ended up with five of them. The older they got, the weirder they got. The weirder she got. And I was the head nut. And in spite of my crazy drinking young, I became a school teacher. Hey, your mothers feel better about that, I'm sure. You know, a guy commits felonies and blackouts, becomes a school teacher. Just a hobby. Lighten up, for God's sakes. But, you know, when you do things I do in blackouts, why, they call you up to Sacramento and ask for your license back. And I did not want to lose my teacher's license, because I love teaching, and I was a good teacher. Kids love me. I love the kids, and I was a hell of a good teacher. They asked my wife one time why I was such a good teacher. She said, well, he's a very well-educated adolescent. I hate it when they're accurate and cruel. Anyway, I taught up in the San Joaquin Valley for 3 years, and then we moved to Oceanside, California, which is 30 miles north of San Diego, right on the blue Pacific. That's why they don't call it Riverside, Dave. And I said I was a very good teacher. I did a hell of a good job. And I became very paranoid about not having those blackouts because, as I said, I didn't want to lose my license. So I became more and more and more and more a daily drinker. I had to drink every day to survive. And being a real macho guy, as soon as I moved to Oceanside, I became a surfer dude. And, I loved surfing. I surfed until I was 74 years old. You should have seen me out there that last couple of years. Kids love me. They say, help Mr. Roach back on his board. There you go. But this, I was much younger then, and so another surfer guy and I, another teacher, a guy gave us this building right on the beach there in Oceanside. I mean, right on the water. Been all vandalized. It had been a bar, just a little dump. And he just gave it for us to use, so we opened a surf shop. We're going to rent surfboards and give surf lessons and fix surfboards and make a fortune, never have to teach school again. And we were, as I said, right on the water. Can you imagine? Just right for a couple of budding alcoholics, right. But we fixed the building all up. We put some windows in and painted it all up and got a refrigerator. 3 or 4 months later, we got some surfboards, too. Oh, we loved that place. You know, we became, in the evening, we became sunset connoisseurs. We had these two chaise lounge chairs. And somebody would come down and say, I'd like to rent a surfboard. Screw off, Charlie. We're watching the sunset. And we used to measure sunsets by martinis. I was the mixer. I used to say, it looks like about a 6 tonight, Woody. The best one we ever had, we had a 15 martini sunset. You should have seen it. It was glorious. And the sun and Woody and I went right together. They found us in the morning with sunburned mouths. You remember that? I think that ought to be on the 20 questions. You ever had a sunburned mouth? No, get the hell out of here. You ain't ready yet. Come back when you're ready, pal. Yeah. Well, we did very well with the surfboard shop, and we did a heck of a job and made some money. But the winter came, and it became very cold, and we closed the shop. And in February of 1965, I went down to the shop on a Sunday morning to repair a board, and I had a hell of a hangover. Sunday morning? Oh, really? Oh, no kidding. And I was very thirsty. And I looked in the refrigerator to see if there was a Coke or something in there. And my pal Woody had been there the night before, and he left about this much vodka and a half pint, just a little dinky, half a shot. And then there was some orange juice in the refrigerator, and I said, that would put the fire out. And I was not a morning drinker in 1965, had never been a morning drinker, but it just seemed like a good idea that morning. I mixed up that little dinky drink and drank it, went about my business. I don't know if we have many new people here tonight. We didn't have any desire chips. Have you ever been to those meetings where you desire the girl giving the chips? That's, I've been there. That little bit of booze went in my system, and I'm sanding on the board, and the resin's cooking, getting ready there, and that little tiny half a shot got in my system and circulated around. You know, it'll do little. And my mind talked to me. My mind said, shame on you, Cliff. That was Woody's booze you drank. Don't get ahead of me. Why don't you go up to the liquor store and get Woody a pint? That's the kind of guy I am. That afternoon, I got Woody a fifth. And you know what happened? I just ended up a mess. The resin all over me. The board was screwed forever. And the shop was a mess. I crawled home literally on my hands and knees 11 blocks. Got up the next morning and called Ralph for an inordinate amount of time. Remember him, Ralph? And I said to my wife, sick as a dog, I said, I got to do something about my drinking. I'm getting drunk when I don't even mean to. And she had one of those pre-Al-Anon ticks in the eye by then. It's a marine town. We couldn't let her go downtown. But that morning, she had cut this little thing out of the paper, which she gave to me, little devil. I don't know why she thought to do that. And it was the ad for AA. I know Tom might be able to correct me. It's the only ad I think we've ever had. I love it. It's just a perfect ad for Alcoholics Anonymous to me. It says, if you want to drink, that's your business. If you want to quit, call Alcoholics Anonymous. Or Pat thinks one time it read, that's our business, call Alcoholics Anonymous. Whatever. We're not a hospital. We're not a treatment center. We're not a 12-step house. We're not a do-good society. Hell, we're not very nice people. But if you're new in this room tonight, this room is just full of people who go to the ends of the earth for you, if you want to. If you don't want to, that's how I feel about it. Maybe other people are more tender-hearted than I am. I used to go, no, but now I go. Anyway, it seemed like a good idea, so I called the A&A. And old Stan came out. There were only 12 meetings in the area at that time. Now there's 650. And so they took me to the meetings, you know, six dodos sitting around a table with a collective IQ of an orange. I mean, do. I tried to help them. The third night, I was laying a little Nietzsche on them, and this guy said to me, hey, we keep it simple here. I said, no kidding. You could have fooled me, Leroy. So I hung around a little while, didn't drink for 5 months, and went back out. And then for the next 5 years, I was an AA loser. And if they ever have a Losers Hall of Fame, I'll have a bus right by the door. I mean, I was the loser's loser. Overeducated, pompous, smarmy, smirk on my face, judging you. Couldn't wait to get out of there. I used to go to this speaker meeting on Sunday night because it was short and early. And I'd hear these speakers and sound like everybody's name was Clem. You know, he was just out of bib overalls about an hour and a half. And he was always talking about what I heard him say. None of them said this. I heard them say they had been rehabilitated. You know the word rehabilitated? Well, my hero in 1965 was Eldridge Cleaver. He was a black militant terrorist. That was my politics were blow it up or burn it down. I didn't really give a shit which. But Eldridge had given this great speech a few months earlier, and he was talking about the prison system, how they were always trying to rehabilitate him. He says, you know what they'd never known? He had never been rehabilitated. You can't rehabilitate somebody who's never been rehabilitated. That's how I felt in the A&A. Obviously, at some point in your wretched lives, you'd been okay. I have never been okay. I was not okay when I was 4 years old. When I was 4 years old and I lived on the Speedway in Venice, California, and I used to stand out there, wait for a car. There weren't many when I was 4 years old. And when a car would come, I would go. And then like a little soldier at his post, I'd wait for the next one. Didn't know how to do this yet, you know what I mean? People come driving along, look at the little button. That's how I felt when I was 4 years old. And it never changed. I lived on the edge of psychosis my whole life. Right on the edge. Now, not everybody's like me. I know that. I sponsor guys that they seem to be half-assed educated, you know, well-adjusted people. they drank too much. Okay. And they, a lot of them don't stick around after about 15 years either. But anyway, I would say probably 65% of the people that I know in AA are more like me, and the other 35% are like Jerry. Peaceful. Sweet. Yeah. Kindly. Yeah. I want to get back to the airport. So anyway, I resigned from AA. Have you ever done that? Really upsets them, doesn't it? Cliff who? So the next 5 years, I'm just this loser in and out. I'd come to AA for 30 days, and I'd be drunk for 2 years. That's a slip. And then I'd come for a year and a half, 30 days, and I'd be drunk for a year, and on and on and on and on. Just a loser's loser. I believe I almost died of alcoholism because I'm a functioning alcoholic. I'm the kind of guy who gets up every day and goes to work and does the job and does it better than you, who does it better than anybody. I'm a goer and a dealer and an achiever. I'm a functioning alcoholic. My buddy at home says a functioning alcoholic is one whose wife works. Don't tell that in an Al-Anon meeting either, I said. The week I came to Alcoholics Anonymous this time. Oh, by the way, the college professors, they say that 95 to 97% of alcoholics who die of the disease of alcoholism, who become dead from alcoholism, are people like me, functioning alcoholics. Only 3 to 5% of us die on Skid Row. Most of them are people who go to work every day until the liver goes, or the heart goes, or the bleeding ulcer goes, or car wrecks, a real popular way to being beaten to death. I did that on the installment plan. It doesn't work worth a damn. But anyway, the week I came to Alcoholics Anonymous this time, I weighed 163 pounds. I had 4% body fat. I know, because I used to measure it. You know? I used to surf for like 3 hours and then get out and run 5 miles. I could bench press 285 pounds. Took me 25 minutes to pass a mirror. For God's sakes, don't ask me for directions. I'd say it's right over there. AA has made me twice the man I used to be. And I was one of the top 3 debate and speech coaches in the United States. That's an honor roughly equivalent to being one of the top 3 prostitutes in Elko, Nevada. But among speech coaches, it's a big deal. I became one of the top speech coaches in the nation by mistake. The principal called me in one day, which he did a lot of that. But this day he called me in, he got this flyer in the mail about a debate and a speech tournament, which was being held down the road at San Diego State College, 30 miles away. And he says, you know, I was teaching a speech class. So he said, I bet some of your kids would get a lot out of that. You ought to go down and go see what that's like. So, you know, I was in big trouble, so I said, what a good idea, you know, we are. And I got this old station wagon, about 6 dodos, and down the road we went. We got down to that tournament 30 miles away, and we were amazed. There was like 50 schools participating in it, probably 500 contestants. All the boys were in 3-piece suits with vests and ties. The girls with these lovely business clothes. We're in Levi's and sweatshirts. What the hell do we know? And they killed us. We did not win a round, not one round. I mean, they ground us to the dirt, what they did. I don't know what kind of drunk you are, but I don't care for losing. And I went in the coach's room. There were about 20 of them in there, and they're all pals. They've been doing this for years, and they snubbed me. It seemed to me. So I hung around all day. They can snub you longer that day. You know how we are. One guy there really ticked me off. He had a lot of hair. That pissed me off right away. Not just hair. I mean, it was that steel gray not a hair out of place. 9 barbers to get it right, you know. He had about $1,000 suit on. The other coaches did this when they went in front of him. I don't know, about 2 in the afternoon, this guru turns to me and says, where are you from? God, I was grateful to be spoken to finally. I said, Oceanside. And he said, oh, where's that? I told you, 30 miles up the road. Where's that? He gave me a resentment. And I went back to Oceanside High and I built me a speech team. Took me 4 or 5 years, but I built a juggernaut speech team is what I did. I built a powerhouse speech team, and I did it with sheer hatred. 7 in the morning till 9:30, 10 o'clock, I'm in their faces screaming and yelling, coaching! The guy next door to me used to say, I'd love to watch them leaving your room wiping the spit off their glasses. Reporter said to my captain, what's the secret of your coach's success? The kid said, terror. She wasn't lying. She's the chairman of the speech department and the chancellor of women's studies at San Francisco State College today. Didn't do her any harm. Couple of bruises on her butt, perhaps. That's about it. Poor old Bobby Knight, they fired him for choking one guy. Yeah. And it was a guy. But anyway, you know how hard that is? You know how much that takes out of you to make 150 people do what they don't want to do? From 7 in the morning till 9:30 at night in their faces. And I don't eat all day either. I'm a functioning alcoholic. You eat, it spoils it, right? You drink 300 cups of coffee. And you stay pissed off. By the end of the day, the nerves are hanging out the end of my fingers that far. My brain's too big for my head. Every muscle in my body's in a knot. But lucky for me, out in the glove compartment of the car, seal unbroken, I'm a functioning alcoholic. There's a half a pint of hot vodka. I love to talk about hot vodka at Al-Anon meetings. But you guys know. And it would just, I didn't touch it all day. I don't have to touch it all day. I just have to know that it's waiting for me when I get through here. And it would call to me and say, go get him, Cliff baby. I'm waiting, darling. Finished with that last hit, I'd lurch out to my 58 Chevy, my surfing car. And I'd open up that hot vodka and one of those cheap stogies I smoked in those days. And I always drank half the half pint. Remember that first drink, that first hot vodka? Blah, 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 blah. Oh, that puff on the stogie. Damn, you're a good coach. And I'd finish the half pint, and I'd sit there in the darkness of my car and smoke my cigar. And I would have my 8 minutes. In all the years I was a loser in and out of AA, I never once told you about the 8 minutes. I don't know what your story is. This is my story. After I drink about a half an hour, I don't care what I'm drinking. After I drink about a half an hour, something happens to me. And I have about 8 minutes where everything in my life is all right. Where there's nothing wrong with me for about 8 minutes. I am enough for about 8 minutes. And then I would put that car in gear and I would drive home and really start drinking. And we had these 5 kids. And I'm a violent alcoholic and a sarcastic, mean, foul-mouthed, vicious alcoholic. And I got drunk every night for the last 7 or 8 years at home. And I turned that house into an insane asylum. Three of my kids were in high school at the time, late 60s now. Three kids were in high school in the late 60s now. Oldest son is working his way through high school as a hashish salesman. Never had to give him any spending money, I'll guarantee you. Used to hit him up for a fifth about once a week. Yeah, Dad. Got hair down to his butt, you know, his head went like this all the time. Called his mother, man. Hey, man, what's for dinner? Loved LSD. They see things, those guys. Some of you remember, I'm sure. But I'd be right in the middle of a sentence. He'd say, what was that? Of course, the shape I'm in, I'd say, I don't know. What was that? Where? What? When the daughters had boyfriends who looked like him, they all get on the couch together. It was just a mess. It was a zoo. I destroyed my family. Let's put it that way. The book says that every alcoholism destroys seven lives. We were right on the money, weren't we? Five kids and pre-Al-Anon and me, all our lives destroyed. But I built the speech team. Thought I forgot, huh? And after a couple of years, my team won one of those tournaments. But I didn't say anything to that gray-haired guy. It wasn't time yet. We know when it's time, don't we? The next year, there were 12 or 14 tournaments, 30, 40 schools in each tournament. We took first place in every single tournament. I can wait. I think revenge is better than Christmas. Don't you? The next year, there was a tournament. There were 25 schools competing in the tournament. My team scored more sweepstakes points than the other 24 schools combined. Then I went up to the gray-haired guy. Remember him? And I put my nose right against his and I said, do you know where Oceanside is now? And he just looked blank. He said, what are you talking about? I said, don't you remember about 4 or 5 years ago? That's stupid to me even now. Don't you remember about 4 or 5 years ago, you said to me, Oceanside, where's that? And he said, we just moved here from Nebraska. I didn't know where it was. And that is the story of my life. 4 or 5 years on my bed every night lying there, I'll get you, yes. And he's down in San Diego. He doesn't even know it. Anyway, right after that, Pat and I had one of our main events, which the neighbors have come to miss so much. Our neighbors never got television until after I got sober. We were the entertainment, weren't you? Am I alone here? What's going on? He's coming back! He's coming back! They all had those Venetian blind marks on their forehead, you know. But that night, boy, we had a pip, and I threatened to move out again. And she tells us better than I do. Wednesday, she'll tell you how she forgot her lines. So out I went. And I'm living down at the beach where I'd wanted to live anyway with my surfboard. I'd said for years if I could unload that witch and those long-haired dope fiend children, I'd be okay. I could drink like a gentleman again. And it wasn't working out. I mean, I was drunk. I was missing work, which I'd never. That was my badge of courage. You know, I missing work, and I felt like my life was slipping between my fingers. And I went by the house one afternoon. I was haranguing Pat about money. And the hashish salesman was kind of bobbing in the background there, humming a tune from the planet Pluto. And as I look back on it, it's probably the stupidest thing I ever did in my life. You know, I'm a speech teacher, and I teach my students to have eye contact with your audience, but I'm getting a bad neck here trying to talk to everybody. You'll have to rub my neck tonight. Where was I? Oh, well. What? David, thank you. Thank God she stayed awake tonight. Anyway, I said to my son, what's it like not to have your old man around the house? That's dumb. You know, David was I was far harder on him than any kids, physically especially. He had every reason to be terrified of me, be afraid of me physically. And usually when he talked, he looked at your shoes, you know. That day I asked him what it was like not to have his old man around the house. And he looked at those big brown eyes. And he looked me right in the eye. And he said, it's beautiful. And I went back to that dump on the beach and ran and raved and screamed and hollered, but I did not take a drink that afternoon. And I will be forever grateful for the courage of that 16-year-old kid who looked me in the eye. And I yelled and sniveled a while, then I went out and watched, which is still today, the most beautiful sunset that I've ever seen. It was one of those, you know, with the sky and the ocean and the wet sand are all magenta, all the one color. And about the time that the sun was going down into the water, I had what our big book calls the moment of clarity. I saw me. Polly calls it the moment of grace, and I like that too, the gift. As far as I'm concerned, it's all a gift, just a gift. Grace. And I went in the bedroom and dug out the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I'd picked up in one of my travels through the program. And being an English teacher, I thought it was very poorly written. You won't surprise you to hear that it read a lot better this time. And then the meeting this morning, they were talking about surrender, about giving it up. That really improves your reading, doesn't it, when you surrender? And I read the big book. If you're new tonight, I read it for 3 days and three nights. I called in sick. I didn't go to work. I ate a little bit and slept less. And I read the big book. I read it cover to cover. I read all the stories. I read the appendix in the back. And in the second edition, there's a story called The Professor and the Paradox. And he was another egotistical school teacher, and he saved my life. And on the third time through the book, on the 13th of January, 1970, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I was on page 63 again. And on page 63, you know, there's a little prayer, and the prayer is step 3. I always called it the formal terms of surrender. And I knelt down on that filthy linoleum floor in that dump at the beach where I was living, and I read the third prayer out, set prayer out loud to myself. I read, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me. You will relieve me of the bondage of self. And when I was new, I looked up the word bondage. You know what it means? It means slavery. Relieve me of the bondage of self. And I had a spiritual awakening. I with nothing big, you know, no wind up my yin yang or anything like that. It was I just knew I was going to be all right. I knew I was not in charge of my life anymore. You know, a little girl in the grapevine 2 years ago had exact experience I had in a drying out place in Ohio. I've met her. And she was 17 years old, and she did exactly what I had done 32 years before. She knelt down and read the third step prayer out loud to herself. And you know what she said in the Grapevine article? She said, I was engulfed by a great laughing love. There it is. And I got up off my knees, and that night I was at Bill Blake's house. He was the little electrician there in Oceanside, former Skid Row wino. On the streets of Oceanside, 8 years earlier, got sober, became an AA fanatic. You know the type. Kind of piss you off when you're a loser. You know, I'd go to a meeting, he'd pounce on me. You want to go to a meeting tomorrow night in Los Angeles? No. What I wanted to say was, I can care for you jerks here. Would I want to go 100 miles to meet some more of you? You know. But isn't it funny, of all the contempt I had for him, isn't it funny that that night I'm knocking on his door? And Margie, Bill's wife, opened the door. Here he is on the porch. Larry Loser. Big L on the forehead, you know. Are you new tonight? If you're new, listen to this. If you didn't hear anything else tonight, listen to this. I have never seen... seen anyone so glad to see me in my life. This loser. She saw me. She lit up. Oh, Cliff. Oh. In the house I go. Pours me a cup of coffee. Oh, this is wonderful. This is great. Oh, Bill's been nuts lately. He's had nobody to work with. Oh, this is so good. Then Bill comes in. Cliff! Ah! About a half an hour, I'm thinking, anything else I do to help you folks out? I'm glad to help any way I can. I felt like Cliff's here. We can start AA now. But, you know, 3 weeks later, I was in a newcomer meeting, and one of the other newcomers said, "What do you mean this is a selfish program?" When the guy asked the question, I knew the answer. I got that answer the night I got here. They were delighted for me. They'd been praying for me for 5 years. But Bill and Mark, you knew the great secret. You can't have it unless you give it away. You can't stay here unless you're willing to give it away. And how you give it away is your business. There's room for everybody here. All these people have stood up tonight. They know what I'm talking about. I've talked at this convention 13 years ago. And many of the people who stood up tonight stood up 13 years ago. And they're still here. And they're happy. You know, that chapter that was read has already come true in their lives. Show me a guy that doesn't want to do anything in AA, and I'll show you guys on the way to the door. My little sponsor had this theory that he believed into his innermost self, and he taught it to me. Everybody who comes to AA has alcoholism. We can take care of that. And everybody who comes to Alcoholics Anonymous has their own particular form of nutso, you know. He used to say, we got a wrench that'll fit every nut. But he also believed that everyone who comes to AA has a gift of some kind that they can do better than anybody else, or at least very well. Some gift that I can bring that'll make AA better. And he believed, and I believe, that if I don't bring my gifts, I have to go back out there and die. He was the worst speaker in the history of AA. You heard him once. He was awful. He never got out of World War II. One time he bought this damn watch with a bell. He was still in World War II, and he went, ding, oh, then I got sober. He used to always say, I've talked everywhere in AA once. But you put him in the front seat of a car with a new guy. He was magnificent. And that's how AA became from 2 almost 3 million. One drunk talking to another drunk in the front seat of a car on the way to a meeting. He was the greatest 12-stepper the world has ever known. When he died, there was as many people in this room tonight. We had a meeting for him, and everybody came. I got to lead the meeting. I said, how many of you here loved Bill? Every hand in the room shot up. I said, how many of you here had a resentment against Bill? Every hand in the room. My sponsor never had a resentment, ever. He was a carrier. He was so glad to see me that night. That's the last nice thing he ever said to me, as long as he lived. The nicest thing he said the first 5 years was, shut up! Shut up? I told him, I have degrees, you know. He says, so does a thermometer. You know, they stick that sometimes. I thought the first step was, shut up and get in the car. Now here I am, 35 years sober plus, and I've come to the conclusion the first step is, shut up and get in the car. In the back seat on the hump. Yeah. There's a method to that too. If you're the one in the middle on the hump, you find a new guy. Hey, come with us. I'm on the window now. Oh, he was so cruel to me. Pat loved him. She just adored him because he was so cruel to me. And nobody ever loved me any more than that man did. Nobody. He took me to a meeting every night for 2 years. He took me to a meeting every night for 2 years. The first year was just he and I. The next year, Al came along, and Pat came along, and Skip came along, and Bernie came along. Pretty soon we had three carloads, and we went everywhere in Southern California. We didn't go to a meeting a week around the table. We went everywhere in Southern. He just told me what time. Pick you up at 5. Oh, God, Los Angeles. You know, I'll pick you up at 6. One night I went crazy. We went over inland, some goofy, Hemet, some town I didn't even know was there. But what he did is he took me to meetings where people were laughing. See, he knew me. He knew I can't stay here. I'm sorry. If all it is Gray Tunnel meetings, I can't stay here. I can't. Now, a lot of people love Gray Tunnel meetings, huh? You know, where the six guys sit around the table and stay sober? To get the expression right, you have to have really bad hemorrhoids. You know? And sobriety is like this long gray tunnel. And you trudge. Every year a trapdoor opens and a cake comes down. I mean, if you like them, good, but don't wait for me. I'm not coming. I'm going to where people are laughing. I can't live without the laughter of Alcoholics Anonymous. To me, the spiritual part of the program is the laughter. Nothing I laugh at will ever come back and haunt me again. The stuff I used to lie in there to turn into my teeth and my stomach turning, it's funny now, and it can't ever touch me again. Oh, I love to watch people start laughing. I have to get me a new dodo, take him to a meeting, take him to another meeting. After about 12 or 13 meetings, one night he goes, gotcha! I gotcha now. Because once you're laughing, you belong, see? Do you ever watch that? Sometimes I talk at a place and they bring the people over with the wristbands, you know? And there'll always be like two of them that don't want to laugh. They just kill them to laugh. They'll go, protecting their right to drink, you know. But the laughter, oh, I love the laughter of it. It's the spiritual part of the program. Pat and I get these brand new little Al-Anons. We take them to a meeting like this, AA meeting. We get her in between us where she can't escape. And the guy up here is talking, I fell in the Christmas tree and smashed all the presents. And we all go, yeah. And this new little Al-Anon sitting there, not funny to her. So we take her to another meeting tomorrow night. One night she throws her head back and laughs. And there, Alan, I don't care. Once we get you laughing, we gotcha. And my sponsor was a fanatic on doing stupid things that had nothing to do with my life. I had real problems. We owed $1 billion, and I didn't have a brass razzoo. I had kids on drugs. My wife wouldn't go to Al-Anon. She had a mean mouth. And I'd go tell him my troubles. I'd have these nervous breakdowns and just cry and sob and tell him it's all wrong. He would always listen. Good sponsors listen, right? I found it's good to make a noise once in a while, like, huh. That way they think you're paying attention. But I would finally just run down. And he would say, go get Al and take him to the meeting. What the hell's that got to do with a nervous breakdown? I hated Al. He was a big jerk, a big blowhard. He was a 10-year loser. I was only a 5-year loser. But I'd go get Al, put him in the car, blah, 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 blah. We'd set the meeting up, make the coffee, everybody come to the meeting, everybody go home. We'd set the meeting down, wash the coffee pots. He was real shaky. We'd have those real cups. He just put his hands in the water, you know. But I could dry. Put the blowhard in the car, blah, 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 all the way home. And I'd let Al off. And I'd start driving home, and this feeling would come over me. It started right here, and it would just spread out through my body. It felt so good, it terrified me. Better than the 8 minutes ever was. It only lasts 40 seconds, come on. I thought it's because I got rid of Al. Yeah. But, you know, standing at the door and greeting people and mopping up the floor and taking the new guys to meetings, going on 12-step calls with my sponsor and seeing the light come on in people's eyes. That feeling just kept growing and growing and growing. I've never done anything in AA for anybody that hasn't made that feeling grow and be better and better and better. Al got drunk once more. He had 11 months and 17 days. And guess who he called? He called me. And I went over and I'm pep talking him. Get a shower. Come on, change your clothes, Al. We're going to a meeting tonight. It's one day at a time, pal. That's all. One day at a time. And all of a sudden, out of my mouth, I said, I love you, Al. And I knew it was true. I knew I wanted Al to be sober as much as I wanted to be sober myself. And if you're new, that's how we define love around here. What we do for each other. We want each other to stay sober as much as we want to stay sober ourselves. We call, we have a funny word for love, don't we? Service. What a dumb word for love. You know? Mother Teresa was in our area a number of years ago before she, you know, before she died. Of course she was. Before she died. Oh. But she had a heart attack when she was in our area, and a couple of the doctors were AA buddies of mine, a cardiologist, and they took care of her. And they said you couldn't be in the room with her and not know that she was really a spiritual person. And a reporter asked her this question, and she answered him, and it was in the paper, and I cut it out and carried it on me till it just rotted away. And she said to this reporter, the fruit of faith is love. And the fruit of love is service. And the fruit of service is peace. I will comprehend the word serenity, and I will know peace. And the fruit of service is peace. You know, I was sober almost 2 years when I saw the promises. If you're new, at the bottom of page 83 and the top of page 84. I had read them probably 6 times by then, but I was almost 2 years sober. It was late at night, and I was reading the big book, and I saw the promises. And I think I saw them because they had started to come true in my life. I saw that I would know a new freedom and a new happiness. I would comprehend the word serenity, and I would know peace. Fear of failure and of economic insecurity, fear of people in economic insecurity, that I would learn to handle situations that used to baffle me, like life. And right in the middle of the promises, that sneaky Bill Wilson, what a sneaky man, he put how we do it, why it happens. It says, no matter how far down the scale we've gone, we'll see our experience can benefit others. Then my favorite line in the whole book, that feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. Bill loved English. He loved grammar. He knew that's not grammatically correct. It should be these feelings of uselessness and self-pity. He knew exactly what he was writing. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity. Show me somebody wouldn't help here. I'll show you a loser. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. I've heard over 200 fifth steps in my years in alcoholics, and the number one defect of character of every man I've ever worked with is self-obsession. And Bill promised me that self-seeking will slip away. I'm still waiting on that to happen. I did a lot of formal service when I was the first 20 years in AA. That is to say, I was at GSR and the DCM. Hell, I did the whole alphabet. And then I was on panel 26. I was the New York delegate for our area in panel 26. And I had a tremendous experience. And my buddies did other things, you know, Al and Skip and those guys, they were doing H&I and stuff. And they used to rib me. They used to say, oh, the politician. What do you do that service crap for? You know, you're running for office. Ha, ha, ha. Cute. Terminal cuteness. I used to say to my buddies, I do this because I want AA to be here for my kids if they need it. And I don't want it to be some watered down, psychologized BS. I want it to be the program of action that was brought to me by that little electrician. I want it to be AA if my kids need it. Our youngest son, Chris, has 17 years of sobriety. Our middle daughter, Jan, had 12 years of sobriety and got a bad back and started taking pills. And I have no opinion on pills. They'll cut you off in the sunlight of the Spirit and kill your ass dead, but I have no opinion on them. No opinion at all. And of course, she did drink again. And this lady down here in the front row, just Debbie, a lot of people that my daughter 12-stepped and brought to the program turned their back on her. But not this lady. And she has 5 years now, again, Jan has. And she goes to my home group, sits right behind me in my home group in case I miss anything. And she's just a beautiful lady. She's a teacher, too. Our eldest daughter went wrong. She's been in Al-Anon about 20 years now. She said, well, when I drink, I get sick. My son Chris said, you can get through that. But my daughter Kitty, our Al-Anon daughter, is just it's a great example of the power in the steps. And if you're new tonight, you know, the steps are the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. 1 through 12, that is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. As my sponsor said, because you're a brilliant intellectual, we numbered them for you. 1, 2. My wife and my daughter are two of the greatest examples I have ever seen of the power in the program. We call it the program at our house. We don't call it Al-Anon or A. We call it the program. There's 12 steps in the program, and my wife and my daughter, Kitty, have worked magnificently. Now, this doesn't always mean wonderful things for me. I liked it better when she put ice on her lip and shut up. You know what I mean? But she has grown as a human being beyond, she's not the same person, and neither is Kitty. And so we get together. You ought to say, this family that was too late. No human power could have relieved my family. But by God, today we get together. You ought to hear the laughter. You ought to hear the fun. You ought to see the love. All our kids are in fields where they help the human race. Oh, by the way, the hashish salesman has 4 years now, too. He travels all over the world. He's a famous expert on the growing of coffee. He speaks Spanish fluently. He goes to meetings all over South America, Central America, Mexico, everywhere. He knows people everywhere. Ah, here comes David. And his home group is in White Salmon, Washington. That's his favorite group. But his second favorite group is in Zambia, Africa. And he gets there every time he goes. When he comes in, oh, Dave's here. So he travels all over the world, and he's got a really good program. This goof around here at the tape table knows him real well, helped him a lot. So if you're new tonight, you don't have to believe that all the great things that have happened to me and mine are going to happen to you. You don't have to believe that at all. I didn't believe it was going to happen to me. I believed it happened to Bill. When I sat in the front seat of that car for a year and a half, because I believe it happened to Bill. So you don't have to believe that it's going to happen to you. But you do have to believe that it happened to us. You do have to believe that it happened to me, that a sick, angry, crazy man lives every day of his life just about as that book promised me I would. Happy and joyous and free. That's how I live, and I hope you do too.